Good evening, Detroit Lakes. This is the Vikings Territory Breakdown coming to you crystal clear from Minneapolis, or for the most part, Minneapolis. Well, I'm the only one that's in Minneapolis, actually. Minneapolis / the Twin Cities. I am your host, Joe Johnson, owner of PurplePTSD.com, VikingsTerritory.com, MiniIce.com, and a brand spanking new laptop to up the sound quality on my end. I apologize to everybody who had to sit through trying to figure out whether I was having tech issues or some sort of late onset stutter last week. Couple of Vikings tidbits to talk about this week. So we, as always, have Mr. Joe Oberle on the line. How are you doing?
I don't like this new sound. It makes me sound too old.
No,
I'm
go
good.
Back to complaining about your dog. Like clockwork, my dog starts barking. Never a dull moment here at the Vikings Territory Breakdown show. How you doing, man? Are you at all sad about the Kyle Rudolph situation?
I certainly am interacted with him on
a personal level very often.
Yep, I am. I am sad. It was inevitable, but you know, we kind of thought it was coming last year, and then it didn't, and we saw a spring that it was going to come. Yeah, so it saddens me. He's a great guy, wonderful guy, in the locker room. I've always thought that he was always available, nice guy. Didn't always give you the media soundbite until he was kind of annoyed by something. And then if he was, then you might get a nice little clip from him. But, yeah, wonderful guy, great for the community, and I'm sad to see him go.
Yeah, and we'll get into it a little bit more, but the worst part about it is it really accomplished very little in regards to salary cap relief. I mean, I know you got to start somewhere, but yikes. We were joined again for, I think, the fourth or fifth week in a row.
Old Faithful.
When you're having fun. Old Faithful indeed. Mr. Tim McNiff, who's ready to blow. That sounded
easy there.
Much dirtier than I anticipated. I might have to bring
Wait
back that stutter, that 7-second delay. How you doing, man? Did you ever have a chance to interact with Rudy?
He came right as I was transitioning out of sports, so his rookie in probably his first or second year. And so then I went over there periodically, but, you know, never had a real relationship with him the way that, you know, others who would have been there on a regular basis did. So no real, but I, like everyone else, I guess I respected how much he did off the field, and that what he and his wife did. Of course, there's just few athletes that probably have come to this market and done more than they did in a very genuine way to help. And so that was really something. And then the other thing, I think that I don't know that I was ever like a huge fan of him as a player. I mean, I appreciated him. He was okay. But he's a guy who was sort of a reluctant participant, I felt, when it came to blocking. And that kind of rankled me the wrong way. And then when the Keenum season, I really felt that he really stepped up his game. He was asked to, and he did, whether he was reluctant about that or not, and became more than just a guy who had to block. He was an effective blocker. And then he really carried that on. In the last 2 years, you saw a dip in his numbers as the game seemed to sort of move around him. I really appreciated the fact that guys usually don't become more physical 8 or 10 years into their career, 7 or 8 years into their career. And he did. And I think that just shows you that, one, he probably could have been doing more earlier, but two, he really answered the bell when he needed to. And I really respect that.
You know, it's, from day one, that was always something you'd heard they were going to work on with Rudy was his blocking, you know, because he came in as a great pass catcher, and he exemplified that throughout his career, and pass blocking was the thing he needed to work on. And like Tim said, some of it was reluctant, but then, you know, I think he realized that. You'd hear him say it in sound bites, I got to get better at that. And I think he did. My only criticism of him was, well, early on he had the injury bug that he, I think, corrected in later years. But I think as a result, I didn't see him being as physical with breaking tackles through the middle part of his career. And, you know, it's ironic, this last season, he kind of maybe whether he was mad about the way he's being used, but all of a sudden he started breaking tackles and running through people again. I go, man, look at that guy, you know. So it was nice to see, but it's sad to see if that's what it took. I don't know if he's protecting himself from injury, and it was probably a worthwhile thing, but you know, I just always would complain that a small defense or corner wouldn't be able to take him down very often. So.
We talked a lot about that over the years on Morning Joe's, the show that preceded this one. Excuse me. That it seemed like he was making a conscious decision to just go down on first contact because he had been accumulating a lot of these injuries. And I think a lot of people kind of conflated that with him not being a competitor or being tough, whatever that means, quantitatively or otherwise. But I think he was better suited that way. I mean, he still caught a tremendous amount of the balls they threw his way. I mean, the last time I checked, I think he was near 85% of the targets they threw his way. He caught. Mm-hmm. And Bob Sansevier, who does a weekly sort of nano column on both Purple PTSD and Vikings territory, wrote something last night, a little anecdote about how Kyle's dad is in a fantasy football league that's been around since like pre-internet days, like, you know, paper ledgers and all of that. And it's a really strange league. It's not the type of league that I've heard of before, that they don't give you points for yards or receptions or anything. It's strictly touchdowns. And so he was always drafting Kyle,
number one overall,
pretty much. I mean, out of loyalty, obviously, but also, I mean, there was a point where Rudolph was just nigh uncoverable in the red zone, especially the infrared zone. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something that we have yet to see really get replaced by guys like Irv Smith Jr. or Tyler Conklin. And, you know, it's something that, you know, I think that what he brought to this team, as you guys kind of alluded to, was more than on the field. I mean, he was one of the first things that I, as someone covers the Vikings, was invited to his youth camp out at TCO, and they gave us like 3 press passes. I went with a couple of our writers, and he did like a post little scrimmage media scrum, and it was right after they'd hired DeFilippo, and so I asked him a couple questions, and he was, you know, I had always been really nervous to actually ask questions for the first time because I didn't want to ask something that was stupid or, you know, whatever. And I remember him being very thorough in regards to his answer. It was very genuine. And then he thanked me for my question, which actually meant a lot to me because I think he could tell I was relatively nervous. But I wonder, you know, wherever he ends up, if he's still going to be able to do that camp. Probably not at the Vikings facility, but I mean, there were so many kids and families there, and it was a year in, year out thing. You know, he was a leader in the locker room, and I think that, you know, it is a little discouraging. You know, I know a lot of, for reasons that I just mentioned, some people are like, whatever, you know, Ursus Jr. is the prototypical sort of a wide receiver tight end hybrid. He blocks better than Rudolph did. Rudolph, whatever, we can take it or leave it. But, you know, when you essentially, assuming the cap's going to be about $180.5 million, which I think a lot of people are settling on that number, the Vikings are still, even with that move, I think about $5 or $6 million over the cap, which means that this might be the first of many moves like this that we see in the next couple weeks. I mean, Tim, is that the vibe you're getting, that this is the first, or is this maybe something from an Ngakoue perspective where we thought that was the first trade of many and then nothing happened? You know, I think that, you know, something I didn't add to the agenda, but that lends itself to this is that that was news after we got off the air last week, is Anthony Barr being resistant to any sort of contract restructure, and a lot of people saying, well, the Vikings have reached the peak of kind of kicking the can down the road, giving these guys these extensions, and then expecting them to restructure those extensions midway through. I think a lot of guys are just like, I'm not going to do it. It's a player empowerment movement. Side effect, maybe it isn't. You know, I'm throwing out a lot of different things you can take and run with here, but I have a sense that we're going to see a lot of core players jettisoned here in the next couple weeks.
I think league-wide. I mean, I just don't think the Vikings are, you know, exclusive to this. And he does. He cuts $5 million, you know, and $4.36 and 5.1 or something like that off the books. And he just had to do it. And it's ironic. I thought last week when I saw Anthony Barr saying what he said, I said, well, that's pretty much what Kyle Rudolph said a couple weeks ago to Ben Lieber. You know, I'm worth every penny. And I'm not going to restructure. And here we are. So I think that hard for me to believe that they're going to pay Anthony Barr the kind of money that he is owed. Mm-hmm. So I believe he's the next one. And there may be a restructure. I mean, I understand that they're talking to Harrison Smith about restructuring his contract. I think he will. They always talk to Cousins, and they can take lump sum payouts, so it's not a bad thing for them to take the restructure. I think Dalvin Cook will probably do that same thing. But I think you're looking at now, you're looking at Anthony Barr and Harris. The other, you know, safety. Who am I thinking of?
Anthony Harris.
As the two most likely guys, you know, that you got to have in the crosshairs. I think Remmers has to stay. I mean, I just don't, unless they're going to just take a gamble on somebody else being that good who's out there, you know, in a free agent sense as a tackle.
Reef, you mean?
So, yeah.
Yeah, Reef.
I'm sorry, Riley Reef. Yep, forgive me. Yes, so I believe he stays, but I could be wrong on that one. If I was, I wouldn't be shocked.
You know, I looked at your agenda, Joe, and there was a few of the wish list guys you were talking about potentially coming here that you mentioned, and to me, it all seems kind of moot at this point since they do have so little room. I agree with you. I think we're going to see more names falling before we ever see the Vikings getting in on and making news on anybody new, unfortunately, because, and as Tim mentioned, it's going to be league wide. But the thing is, you know, these guys are going to get cut from the other teams probably because they're going to have big cap numbers and they're going to come here looking for money and or wherever they're going to go. And what are you going to do? You know, there's no room to fit them in. So I just think this is going to be one of the more interesting free agency periods off season because of that fact that you have all these guys that are going to have to, you know, take a walk, and they're going to want their money, and they might not, some of them will get it, some of them won't. And it's going to be fascinating on how it all shakes out there. We've all seen all the quarterback movement going on this spring or speculation thereof. I think we're going to see that plenty more with the rest of the, some big name players and big name contracts.
Yeah, it's really unfortunate that this, I mean, I'm not taking away from where it came from with COVID being much larger than football, but the timing of it with the Vikings being just over the cap when it feels like lots of teams that are either on the fringe of being a contender or are in that conversation but have cap space a la the Colts have the real gigantic upper hand here in a way that I think we haven't ever really seen in the NFL. I mean, there's going to be so many guys available that are, you know, maybe a little over 30 or are maybe under 30, but just resistant to restructures. I mean, it's going to be, as Tim said, and you said as well, Joe, it's just going to be league-wide, and it's going to be crazy. I mean, I don't know how things are going to go with Reef. I think that it's every variable that I look at there really freaks me out because he is probably a little salty in regards to how he was treated before the season started last year. I mean, there was like, I felt like a week before the kickoff for the regular season, and they're trying to get him to basically take this lower amount. And, you know, he's in his early 30s, and they're basically like, well, yeah, you can walk, but then you have 10 days to find another job and then acclimate to that line. It just he basically at first resisted it. Then he was like, well, I can ride it out for this year. And the Vikings gambled in that regard, and then Reef had arguably his best year as a pro, at least his best year as a Viking. And so I don't see him taking much of a pay cut, if anything. And I think that the million-dollar bonus they gave him, that they didn't technically have to because he sat out the non-injury-related time, was kind of an olive branch and saying, like, see, we made up for last year, so don't, you know,
yep, don't break
over the coals too much, you know what I mean? But
we're nice guys.
Yeah, you know what I mean? But it is a little scary because it feels like, I don't know, I mean, I put on the agenda this article about Leonard Williams and how this guy from Pro Football Outsiders or something said that if the Vikings were to add him and then play him next to Michael Pierce and put these two giant guys in the middle of the defensive line, they would essentially catapult the Vikings into Super Bowl contention again. And I don't think that guy watched many Vikings games. I think he just looked at the DVOA on defense and said, well, the pass defense was good, this was good, that was good, but the rush defense was terrible. Therefore, if you catapult the rush defense into the top 10 alongside these other things, this team will be great. I don't know. That's a national media thing, and I think that happens a lot. Not a lot of these guys can really cover all 32 teams. But from an eye test perspective, I don't think anyone who covers the Vikings really feels like, at this point, money notwithstanding, the Vikings are one player away from a Super Bowl, unless somehow that one player was Patrick Mahomes. And that's before you get into the point of they can't even afford a guy like Leonard Williams in the first place. And because of that, they're going to lose more core players than they gain. I mean, I just think that we're in year two of a complete teardown and rebuild, and argument maybe could be made to rip the band-aid off sooner and just move on from as many of these guys as possible to lower the cap gap and also let them go somewhere else. Because what are we going to do? Let them Harrison Smith age more here? I don't know. I just feel like there's a lot of wishful thinking out there in the media, both locally and nationally. I just don't get where a lot of this stuff is coming from. It just feels like this team is broke, and they got a lot of digging to get out of that situation, and they have a lot of question marks outside of that, and there'll be even more so moving forward. And then you go back to the core issue, which is the offensive line, which looks like it's going to get worse before it gets better, if that's at all possible. And so I really don't try to be this negative for effect, but I just feel like there's a disconnect between the reality of the team and what a lot of people are writing about. I mean, Joe, the wish list people have, like, we can't afford any of these people. I don't know where this is coming from.
It's more than one person. I mean, you know, it's a shame they are in a rebuild that because the offense is in really pretty good shape, save for the offensive line. But it's going to take a few players on defense. You need an edge rusher. You need an interior lineman. You need another linebacker, and you got to figure out your secondary. You've got to keep your safeties and maybe add another cornerback. So there's a lot. And you know, we don't even talk about the special teams because Dan Bailey will likely be a cap casualty, and you got to figure out how to get special teams to perform better on coverage and such. So there's no way we are in Herschel Walker mode where we're one player away. We've been there, we've done that, and it didn't work. So it's going to take more than that, in my opinion.
What do you think, Tim?
Yeah, we haven't even brought up Danielle Hunter's name. I mean, so Danielle Hunter signed that extended contract, and now they're, whether this is real or manufactured, he either is or is not, you know, dissatisfied with that contract already, wants to renegotiate that. You know, so what do you do there? I mean, I that's another hard one. And I love the kid. He's very talented. But, man, you know, we missed the entire season, and we were told he was just going to be out a couple of days. And so what's up with the neck? You know, are we ever going to get, like, any sort of, you know, clarity as to what the damage is and what the potential for re-injury is? And is he going to be the same guy? So, you know, I don't know where he would have a lot of leverage other than before last year, I was really, really, really good. And that contract I signed, which I signed with my own eyes and ears and agent, I don't like it anymore. Well, is that the team's fault or is that your agent's fault? You know, and so I don't know. You know, that's a when we start talking about, you know, what we have, is that an asset we have? And is that asset ready to go? And if he is, will he be happy being here? So it'll just there's more questions than answers, and which I guess keeps it interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it's good fodder. It's good. I mean, our traffic, not that people care about this, but is just insane. I think Vikings fans are very voracious in regards to just the amount of opportunity and what everyone has a theory as to how they can fix this team, either in the long and short of it. The Danielle Hunter thing is unfortunate because you feel like, you know, if that was such an untenable situation financially, saving for that injury, they could trade him and get a boatload of picks. I mean, he's just – is there any position outside of the quarterback position, well, especially on defense, I guess, that's blown up or become more crucial to the success of an NFL team than the edge rushing position? It's just increasingly important for obvious reasons. And, you know, he's arguably, for his injury, the best young edge rusher – perhaps in NFL history, broke a lot of records. So it's just, yeah, I shudder to think that, again, like the Riley Reiff situation, is you look at that, every single variable in that situation is bad for the Vikings. The injury, his contract, his unhappiness with it. You know, he doesn't have a lot of leverage. But that doesn't, to him, he might say, well, this is why I need to make more money year to year, because I could be one play away from never playing again, you know, and that's an argument against franchise when guys get the franchise tag. Speaking of the franchise tag, then you get into Anthony Harris, who I think a lot of people are just kind of presuming will be gone. You know, he didn't have the great year that he did. Not to say that he played poorly, but he wasn't the ball hawk that he was the year before. But I've seen him ranked as the seventh best free agent as of now. I mean, there's going to be a lot more free agents I think those lists also give credit to. But getting back and putting kind of a pin in the Kyle Rudolph thing, I mean, do you guys feel like he still got enough gas in the tank that a team, maybe a contender, or somebody will give him a decent contract? How old is he now? 32, maybe?
31, I think.
Okay, so he's still technically, I think, in his physical prime. You know, a lot of people have pointed to him landing in.
So am I.
I think we can hear your knee when you talk. But yeah, there's a lot of different teams that people are pointing to. I think the ones that maybe make sense to me are the Patriots or the Browns, with Stefanski being there. But I mean, his services are still in very high demand, considering how many touchdowns he seems to grab. But I feel like he'll get a pretty good deal somewhere else. Is that your take on it, Joe?
I think they're, you know, yeah, that was one of them that was mentioned. I heard some talk about it on the radio today, and going to the Browns and such. I certainly think he's got plenty to give. And, you know, here's a guy who now has moved into this part of his career where he has, you know, put aside the injury bug, and he has improved himself as a blocker, and he has made some great one-handed catches, highlight reel catches in the last few years. And his biggest problem was he wasn't apparently getting targeted enough, you know. So I think he's got all kinds of stuff left in the tank. He'd be a great guy to have on your team. He might have lost a step as far as speed and such, but he came out kind of ticked off last year and started breaking tackles. So if I was a good tight end away from you know, making noise in the playoffs, I'd pick him up. I don't think he'd go to a place like KC that was speculated because a year ago, because, you know, he's not going to get on the field. And I think he wants to play, and I think he wants the ball coming his way. So But there's plenty of teams that you know, if he came in for the right number, they would be happy to have him. There's no question about that. He's got another couple of years, I think, he can play at a top level.
What do you think, Tim?
Yeah, I think that you know, he'll be motivated. I think Joe said, you know, that you know, he seemed to like picked up his game because he was kind of playing for his, you know, his job, and so I think he'll do that wherever he goes. But you know, here's a guy I think who just had enough talent as a basketball player and as just a young athlete. He liked to catch passes and he was a mismatch and he didn't really have to worry about the rest of the game. And he's, as he's grown up, he's bought into doing the rest of the game. But I don't see teams like just banging down the door like today, just going, wow, Kyle Rudolph's available, you know?
Yeah.
So sort of be, well, does he fit? And if he does, is that as a two tight end set? Because he's not going to start all of a sudden running away from people. I mean, you know, people saying that he's going to go to Kansas City, well, they got a pretty good tight end there, barring injury. So it's not like he's going to go in there and be the starter. So what is the fit? And, you know, what is the option? Does he want to win a ring? You know, does he end up, you know, with a team that's, you know, maybe a player or two away from it? So, I, you know, it's interesting the criteria they use. I mean, I thought with J.J. Watt, I wasn't, like, losing sleep over it, but I really was concerned that he was going to maybe take a little less and go to Green Bay.
And
I felt honestly a little sense of relief when I saw that he had agreed to a contract with Arizona. So, you know, what the priorities are and what is the fit? So I think he'll have options. Financially, I don't think that will ultimately be the driver for him because I just don't think he's going to be pleased with what he gets.
Yeah, and there's some reports coming out saying that he wants to go to the Patriots from this morning, and maybe he's thinking the way that they use tight ends in the past, but I don't feel like the Patriots are near contention right now. But who knows, with Belichick and all these available players out there, maybe he'll put something together that's quasi against league rules. And
he is a community man, though, and you know, he was a big Cincinnati guy, and you could see him going back there, and you know, already with roots in that area, maybe, you know, that seems real important to him, you know, off the field kind of things. And, you know, for me, it would be a shame. I wanted him so bad to win Man of the Year while he was here, because I think he was very capable. He was close to a finalist a couple of years ago, I think.
Yep.
And yeah, I think that's what you're going to see happen. Now he'll go somewhere else and, you know, maybe come in and play really well and get all kinds of attention in a bigger market, and maybe he could win the thing, and that would be nice. But I think he'll catch on somewhere, and you know, I like Tim says, the right fit and the right money, and he'll get to have his year of sea Vikings. You could have had this, or
yep,
like usual.
But usually
an athlete,
that's a big the case, isn't it? Not just players, but franchises. It's just like, we get it. We're cursed.
Returning to the Patriots just a minute, Joe, you know, I think they had more players, veterans, choose to sit out last year than any other team.
That's true.
So, you know, it's not like they all of a sudden, you know, Belichick forgot how to coach or they got really bad. But obviously they need a quarterback. So that would be his first question is, well, who's throwing the ball? And if it's Cincinnati, I mean, all he's got to do is call Mackenzie Alexander and say, how was that? You know, I mean, what was that experience all about? What's that organization all about? Because I think he's just, you know, he's got to be looking at it that he's got, you know, less time in front of him than he's got behind him. So if it is to be, you know, playing a specific role for a certain dollar level, then the payoff has to be, can I get a ring? And I think so that's got to be fit in, you know, the organization. So I think it's probably, to me, much more likely that he ends up in New England, where he may not know who the quarterback is, versus Cincinnati, where he knows who the quarterback is, but that's been kind of a hot mess for how long.
You know, I wonder if Gronk will be back, and I know that Tampa was without O.J. Howard last season, and he's a stud himself. But if Gronk doesn't come back, and they want to go with the kind of either two tight end sets, or just a guy who, again, reliably catches 85% of the balls thrown his way, especially in the end zone. That could be really great.
I think so.
For Rudolph, I would root for him. I'm not going to lie. I mean, that would be great to see him win something. I remember.
Then you'd have to root for Tom Brady then. So what's up?
Well,
with that?
I mean, I always kind of. I don't want to completely ruin any sort of credibility I have, but I kind of do sometimes just because. I don't know if you know if you guys are aware of this, but he's a Big Ten quarterback. So there's that.
did you see him on James Corden last night?
Brady?
I did not.
Yeah.
Was he drunk?
Well, he talks about it. He was pretty funny. You know, he was asked about, you know, throwing the trophy. And he yeah. said, you know, kind of the star of that whole thing is if you hear right before I throw it, you hear somebody saying, you know, don't. And that's my 8-year-old daughter, Vivi, I think his name is. He goes, so what does the situation tell you when an 8-year-old knows you shouldn't be doing something and you think it's a pretty good idea?
I thought that was kind of funny. An overblown controversy. You know, the daughter of the guy who designed the trophy was all saying how disrespectful it was to her father. And it's like he... That, I don't know. I'm a very big intent person. I don't think his intention was to disrespect the memory of a guy who created a clay version of the trophy. I don't know. I think people like
it's
the
shaped like a football. See, exactly. Football, throw football. Come on.
And like when Brady is so Brady that I'm sure that's the first alcohol he's consumed in years. You know, I'm sure his personal trainer made him like sit in a 200 degree sauna for 6 days after that. I hope it was
an IPA that had kale in it, because then he could probably drink.
An avocado. You know, it was like nice to see a human side of a guy who just seems not of
yeah,
this world.
I would agree.
Lots of and, ways.
You know, we say that, but I mean, like, you know, you never hear his teammates complain about him. You know what I mean? They all seem like he's a great guy in the locker room, and yeah, I don't know if it was the first beer he's consumed and whatever, but it was definitely the most. I think it was tequila, you yep. know, and I liked seeing him get loose and sloppy. You know what I mean? He wasn't driving. And you know, I just think to see him do something like that, I mean, I thought it was hilarious. And it was a completely overblown controversy, but then it makes you think, too, what if it was, you know, Patrick Mahomes who had done that? What if it was, you know, an African-American quarterback? You know, yeah. would that have been a bigger deal? Did Brady get away with it because he's Tom Brady?
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, they're like, the hockey people were like, do you know what happens to the Stanley Cup?
I know. there's so much, like, the remnants of alcohol in that. Also, I noticed I've seen the Stanley Cup in person a few times, and I was surprised at how many typos were on it. And like names that were just crossed out. Maybe
it's all those French Canadians from way back.
It has to be. That is a side note, the best sports trophy in my opinion, the Stanley Cup. It's so cool.
Question.
I mean, a good. You know, I hope Rudolph finds a place where he can, you know, get the maybe some more accolades on that side of it, as you alluded to. I mean, I know there was a huge push from the fan and the media community here for him to win the Walter Payton Man of the Year award a couple years ago, and I was really surprised he didn't, because there was such a gigantic push by everybody for him
yeah.
to do that. But for the Vikings,
Joe, they put up that video, Dear Kyle. I mean, if people were reposting that with his move last night, yeah, I mean, if you just feel like you want a good cry, just
yeah.
watch Dear Kyle.
Right.
That doesn't yeah. do it.
And he wrote a really nice farewell letter to the people of Minnesota and Players Tribune, which people should definitely check out. I'll put a link to that in the article about this show if you're listening to the show on a podcast platform. It's sort of like Vikings.
And that's Kyle Rudolph. That's Kyle Rudolph, you know, coming through there. I mean, we heard all this talk about the podcast with Ben Lieber, where he was out. He was probably a little raw from news coming down that he might not be back, and they were in negotiations or whatever caused that. And that's Kyle too. But I think this thing that he put out about how much he loves this place, and that's really who that guy is, and he's a genuine dude. So we'll miss him. I certainly will.
And how do you guys feel about the future of the position as it stands right now? I mean, I feel like they had a really good 1-2 punch with Irv Smith and Rudolph. You know, one was more traditional. I wanted to say more of a physical tight end, because that's just the way that he played. Rudolph wasn't getting a lot of separation, but he also wasn't like a prototypical physical tight end. But you guys get what I mean. Urshifu Jr. is a little more of a wide receiver, can kind of beat you over the top. But
everybody always says that, Joe. But when does he do it?
Okay,
I mean, is the issue Irv Smith, or is the issue with the way they've used him? Because he is, for what they used a draft pick on him and everything, have you seen the payoff for that?
Was going to be real kind of my two cents on it. I know he had a couple quote unquote breakout games this year, but he was a second round pick, right?
I think that's correct.
Yeah, I think so.
I just feel like they could have taken a lot of different guys at that spot, and it just doesn't feel – I know it's hard, especially with tight ends. They don't get – you know, there's not a lot of tight ends racking up 100-yard games, and so it's hard to – you know, maybe expectations need to be tweaked. But I kind of felt the same way about Irv Smith as I did about B.C. Johnson 2 years ago, where everyone was like, this guy's a revelation, and our expectations were just so low because of guys like Treadwell that I think we conflated – mediocrity or sub-mediocrity with success. And so I am just not 100% sold that what the team got out of Rudolph, which is very consistent, especially again touchdowns, is going to be replicated by Irv Smith and or Tyler Conklin.
Do we know what kind of blockers they are too? I mean, you know, we are all of a sudden losing.
Pleasantly surprised about Irv Smith. Conklin,
that's what got him there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's true.
We had Red Ellison, you know, and then we had a couple other guys who were always going to be that guy. And every time Tyler Conklin got an opportunity, you know, that's why I talk about Rudolph being kind of a reluctant participant in it, because he knew he didn't have to, really. They were still going to throw him the ball. They weren't going to bench him. Tyler Conklin,